Hi, dear listeners. So this is the next to last interview I'm having on my final day in Locarno. And I'm here with another debut director, and she has her first feature film, which went straight to the international competition. That's a huge honor for Saul Blue-Weiter. Hi.
Hi.
So at first, this is the first feature-length film you made after a number of shorter movies. How was it to be selected for Locarno with it?
It was such a surprise, and I was very happy that we got into this festival and into main competition. I was really honored. Because it's like a mecca for real art house cinema, so I was really happy to be appreciated by the programmers.
And are you nervous showing the first feature-length film that you made here on such and such, also such a big competition? Like, we have some pretty big names, and as you said, many established artists like Hong Sang-soo is here. We have a special junket with Jane Campion, so it's a very glitzy atmosphere also.
To tell you the truth, I'm a very anxious person, so for me it's like... This all, being a part of something this big and attending so many events and being in the spotlight, it's kind of challenging for me as a person who is used to be, in the darker corner, not in the spotlight, but somewhere outside of it,
It's also interesting because the theme of your movie, which is called Toxic and International, but the original title, I tried to translate it, and it said something like, it's obvious or it's plain to see. Is that a correct translation of the original title?
No, it's actually, it's an untranslatable word, but akiplesha means, this word is usually attached to a person who is very nasty and shameless, who does outrageous things. And akiplesha literally is like a word made of two words, and it means that literally a person who takes your eyes out. They're so like shameless and obscene that your eyes are falling down, something like that.
Yeah, so it's a very visual thing, which is also interesting because your movie deals with two teenage girls, and they both aspire to become models and then get involved with a somewhat shady agency. They live in like underclass rural industry town where there really is nothing. They want to escape that kind of atmosphere. They want to make it big, and then they see the best way out in becoming models, which really takes a toll on these girls. So how did you develop that theme, that whole story?
I think I used some of the things that I was part of when I was a teenager. I was going to this model castings, it was very popular at that time in like 2008, 2007, and especially in the Baltic countries, there would be many people who would come, like modeling scouts, and they would go to schools, to find girls that would fit, to be signed, for their agencies. And I was going to these castings and standing in these enormously long lines, but it was just because I remember people would say, oh, you're so thin, go to the casting, it's like my physique... my physique was the only thing that I could use, to capitalize on. So it was like I was a little bit part of it, but I had some friends who actually became models and were traveling, and it brought some peculiar stories about the insides of the industry and everything.
So are some of those threatening things that we see the agency doing, for example, that they want to ship the girls just basically off to some countries where they then will have to work in lower class model agencies, or maybe even some kind of shady dealings with escorting and stuff. We never really know what it is. Is that from real life, or is it something you researched?
Yeah, actually, I know I'm mentioning this a lot of times already during the interviews, but I think that is important because I was very inspired by this documentary. from 2011 that is called Girl Model. It's directed by David Redman and Ashley Sabin, and it follows this, you know, it follows this modeling scouts that travel through Trans-Siberian Railroad and go to these villages to recruit models and do these castings. And it also follows one 13-year-old girl who travels to Japan to work, and they show everything that is happening there, you know, how she's alone, no parents, you have to watch your weight, they live in this cramped, you know, rooms all together, and they're just being driven off from one casting to another. They have no time to do anything, you know, no money. And the now I think more teenagers of that age speak English, but in that film they are taken from Russia and they don't speak any other language, and in Japan they cannot communicate properly. So I was inspired by this film, and then I watched it and I was doing research, I was reading some articles about this, about this process of very young models being sent to Asian countries to work, you know, because they really like this childish look there, you know. So it really works for them to hire very, very, very young models. So yeah, it came the research then, and I also talked to some of the girls who were traveling, you know, which I knew that were traveling as a model. So yeah.
For the story itself, it stays located in that industrial town. We never actually see the girls getting out or pursuing their career. And it focuses on what they try to do to even get into that world, which they might not even properly know. Did you also grow up in such an underclass industrial area?
Yeah, well, I think in the film I exaggerated this place, but we actually shot a lot of scenes in the area where I am from, you know, because it kind of during the Soviet occupation, it was the hotspot for the factories and the industrial area, you know, and after the independence, it was just left desolate, you know. So these factory landscapes and old buildings are there still, you know. So yeah, I wanted to use the original environment where
I was. So would you identify as underclass?
Yeah, absolutely.
But still you portray the underclass in a very, well, let's say a very traditional way. We see them drinking and smoking, which is one of the main perceptions actually of the middle class. Often it's even assumed that cigarettes and alcohol would be the currency of the underclass. I don't know if it's the same in Baltic newspapers, but if in German newspapers you read something, welfare recipients say they cannot afford rent, even though rent just costs as much as 10 packs of cigarettes and 5 packs of alcohol. So as if the only way to convey to the underclass how much something is worth is translated into alcohol and cigarettes. Even when I was at Berlinale earlier this year talking to Carlo Chatrian, who was the director of Locarno before he came to Berlin, he actually told me when I said the tickets are too expensive for underclass people, well, it's just as much as 3 beers. So this is very, very, very common. Is it the same? Because we see the people basically, we see them smoking, we see them drinking, we see them being lazy, not looking for work, and they also look dirty and behave vulgar. Is that how you experienced underclass?
Yeah, I actually, now I think about this word underclass, I would say I'm more from a lower middle class, you know, because when I was born, we were just became an independent country. So everybody was living in kind of this lower middle class conditions because it was communism, you know, for 50 years. So yeah, so everyone was living in very, very similar conditions. But yeah, I think connected to that, people were always using a lot of Russian curse words, and still do. I think it's we cannot get rid of it at all. But at that time, it was the wild 90s and 2000s. So yeah, tracksuits, cigarettes, vodka, curse words. I was, the area was a huge part of it. I was 11 and people were throwing Molotov cocktails outside. So I have no idea what to do with this memory. I still don't know what year was that, but I was 11, it was 2000 and something, but so many stuff was happening in that area, because it is in the year in the 90s and year 2000s, this area was like a area for this very famous mafia family in Lithuania, so it was like peculiar shit going on and with the guns and everything, yeah.
And the girls, the one of the girls especially is very scared to be not thin enough. The other one is worried about her body because she has a small condition. She has a slight limp. So she's afraid that this kind of little handicap might make her unfit to become a model. And both of them, especially the one who's afraid to be too heavy, go to extreme measures to be beautiful or to accommodate to a beauty standard that they think is desired from them.
Yeah.
Is that also something you watched in your environment?
Yeah, I think like not necessarily in like this kind of scale, but I think that I think that probably every teenager at some point experiences like struggling with body image, you know, and what you expect of your body, and you think of the ways how to fit the projection that you have, and I also experienced that, maybe not in that not in that scale, you know, but I mean, I think that I remember that I was always it was always bad how, like, for, like, in school it was always like either you're too thin or either you're too fat or your ears are too big or your nose too small or your eyes too wide, you know, or like there is like always some characteristic that is wrong with you, that's a perception where you're like operating in school and like in society, and I experienced that, and it's so funny because that's why I made the film that portrays so many different bodies, so many flaws that are so beautiful to me. I don't know, it's like when I remember the time when I was constantly trying to fix some flaw about myself, now I remember and I just think I would like to tell myself that actually this flaw is like the most beautiful thing, you know. And I think that's why I wanted to really emphasize and create this atmosphere of inclusivity, even though it's a hostile environment, you know, in this town, but still there's like a lot of people of like live there with various flaws, various body types and so on, you know.
This is very interesting that you say that, because the movie itself and the story rejects the idea that somebody who has a handicap or who is overweight could be beautiful, and it even uses ableist language, like the C word is used in a way that is to kind of could be seen as to emphasize, for example, that everybody who says, okay, you have a handicap but you can still be a model, you can still be beautiful, would be kind of shady and scheming, because this just isn't the truth. It's kind of like saying on a level that, okay, we all know what's beautiful and this is not.
Yeah, but I'm also, I really wanted to emphasize in the character of Vilma, that is a modeling school teacher, that she's not like 100% evil, as like many people who watch the film portray her as some kind of, you know, very manipulative, shady person. But I believe, like, in this story, she gave to Maria, the main character, something that was actually good. Because she said, oh, you're living. It's okay. No problem, you know. It gave, not necessarily the result about, you know, becoming a model, but it just gave this hope or just feeling for her that she's part of the crew, you know, because Maria was yearning to become part of something, of some community. And it doesn't matter to her what community. I think, like, I never thought about this character as the one that really wants to become a model. She just wanted to be there to have friends, you know. And the modeling school teacher, who is so shady and so manipulative, she gave, like, better and more encouraging words to Maria than her own mother, who comes back and says, you're gonna be a model, you're limp. Just forget it, you know. And I think it doesn't matter if you do become or don't become a model in this case. It was about, like, how people project certain like things on you, and I really wanted to make a contrast that you know, this modeling school like is, yeah, it's shady, it's like a cult and it's like sinister things happening, but it still gave Maria something very good, something that she like started to believe in herself and not think so much that this limp defines her as a person, you know.
And you mentioned, I think, at one of the press conferences that the person of Maria with the limp is based on a girl that you knew in your area. Was there something like that?
I was talking about the giant girl.
Ah, so it was the big girl, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That would you like to tell that again for the just for the listeners?
Okay, okay. Yeah, so I knew there was this neighbor that I had, which had some kind of a hormonal syndrome that just enlarges your body. And she looked like this giant girl that was taller than her parents. And I remember we would always like play in the yard, and she was like the same age of us, like 12, 13 or something like that. And we would play and we would say, hi, hi, and hi, Diana. And she would say hello, and her parents would be so uncomfortable that she's talking with us, and they would rush her out to the doctors or whatever they went, and they would come back and she would stay at home all the time. And like I got the impression that she actually wanted maybe to engage and like go outside, because we didn't think like she was one of us for us, you know. But her parents were so like scared and so ashamed of her that she looks like that, and like I really got this vibe of secrecy. And I wanted to portray this character that you know, because there's like a lot of different types of teenagers, and she's one of the teenagers that still wants to live through teenage things, like try a first cigarette or be a part of a gang, or you know, try alcohol for the first time and like kiss for the first time. But she's like forbidden from all of these experiences because she's not let inside, let outside. So I wanted to portray this character, and especially in the scene where Maria like tells her how to smoke, just to show that she still wants the same things. She's still just a teenager, you know.
And how did you find those two young actresses? Did you cast in the area, or?
We were doing like casting call throughout the whole country. But both of them came from the capital where I live, and I was doing casting for like 2 years, I think. But one of them I found in the modeling school, and it was her first time, her first day in the modeling school, and she was 12. And we came with the casting director and invited her to do like the next chapters of the casting, you know, like the workshops that we did all with more girls, you know, in the group. And Vesta, who plays the main character. Actually, it was a funny story because I casted Giava, the Cristina, earlier, and I couldn't find this girl that would play Maria. And one day I remember on Instagram, I got this sponsored ad, and it was her face, and it was written, "Do you want to become a model?" And it was her face, and I saw her and I thought, wow, this is the girl. And we reached out to the modeling agency that she was signed with, and we invited her to come, but she didn't want to come. She said, no, I'm not interested in acting, you know. And we had to convince her, and I was like giving hell to the casting director and saying, please, we have to get her, you know. But when she came and we talked, and she wasn't scared anymore, because afterwards she said that she was really scared of this like casting, you know, because they are like connected to the modeling industry, so casting for them means that you have to be, you know, shaking and trembling and very, very tense. So it was like a revelation to her that you can come in and it would be like fun conversation.
And what do you hope will the audience take from the movie if they see it here in Locarno or also at international cinema releases?
Well, despite of all the things that are naturally, well, everyone sees like on the surface, I really hope that there will be like the audience that will also see the metaphors that I give, not only about like teenage girls in particular or some like modeling industry themes, but like also a bigger picture. And I hope that the audience can see that like this metaphors and symbols that is there in the film, and like to see wider picture of the modeling school, not just being like modeling school, but also just any institution that offers you like this absolute cure that you just have to pay for, you know.
And do you already have ideas for new feature films, even though this has just come out?
I have a few ideas, but I need a test of time, you know, because I get ideas from time to time, but I need to like rest them a bit to see if they're not just like temporary ones, you know, because you have, when you go into the project, into the development, you're in for like 4 years, so you really need to be like engaged and really feel in the heart that this is what you want to tell.
So 4 years, is this like how long Toxic took to make, about the time?
4 years, I think.
Well, that's, but still, let's hope to see you again. You're now here at Locarno with Toxic, which will also get a release. If it gets a German release, you're of course gonna read it at Movie Break. I say thank you to Saul Blue White, who here made this interview with me, even though she's really tired. And I am also very glad you're all tired after more than one week of Movie Festival. But there's gonna be more content on Movie Break. I'm still Lida, and I say we hear each other.